Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. When deploying your...
Admiral, we have enemy ships in Sector 47.
It's a trap. Our cruisers can't repel firepower of that magnitude. Concentrate all fire on that Superstar Destroyer. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with us.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 32nd episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. I was going to put out an episode a week or so prior to this, but I held off just in case something was announced at Gen Con, and there it is. The Executor Superstar Destroyer is coming. Or maybe it's Executor. I've never really been clear on that one. It's a really beautiful-looking model. It clocks in at about 2 feet long, which I would classify as redonkulously big, but FFG says is a huge ship class. They've also implied that it's only the first huge ship, and there will be more, so yay for planned future releases. Looking at the article, huge ships as a class get a strategic advisor and Ramus Antilles abilities baked in, as well as they get 3 shots instead of 2. What that means is they can pass, and they get a token for every single order that they put out. The SSD has 6 firing arcs, the normal 4, but an extra 2 sides towards the rear. It's going to come with a Commander Palpatine, a Commander Piet, and apparently an Officer Piet as well, and a Director Krennic. A lot of the other cards are ones that have been previously released, like XI-7s. Flight controllers are in there, so you don't have to buy a VSD. You can buy the $200 Star Destroyer. Okay. There's 4 versions of the SSD, and it's guessed that 2 of them are for normal play and 2 for epic style with enhanced stats. The spoiled normal play card has 22 hull, while a partly hidden other one has 33 and throws 10 dice out the front instead of the normal's 8. It boasts a solid 6 shields out the front, and each side has 3, that's a total of 6 because of the 2 side arcs, while the rear has 2. Its defense suite is 2 brace, 2 redirect, and 2 contain, which is pretty solid, and will take some serious tricks or firepower to bypass. Among other slots, the 2 main ones that I look at are it has 3 officer slots for some serious trickery there, and 2 fleet command slots. So with its 5 squadron, you can run both All Fighters Follow Me and Entrapment Formation, or any other combination you might like. That said, while the SSD is obviously powerful and very robust, it doesn't worry me that much. It's just one big ship, and the cheapest one is 220 points before Commander and upgrades, so after all that, you're probably only going to get 1 other ship and probably some squadrons. That means it's going to get hammered by a fleet that, even with its ability to pass, will out-activate it and start overwhelming its defenses with multiple attacks. It's also a 4-command ship, which means that it has to plan well in advance. This can be mitigated with Tarkin or Thrawn, or by using some of those officer slots, but it does need help with this. Also, even with a built-in Ramus for a token, it still only resolves 1 order a turn, which I'll get to the significance of in a second. For now, I think Thrawn is going to be a solid choice for a commander on an SSD. What I think is going to be the main drawback is that it has no ability to turn naturally. It tops out at speed 2 and gets 0 clicks anywhere on its chart. This means a couple of things. One, that you're going to be running a lot of nav commands on it, which will keep it from doing anything else unless it has Thrawn. It doesn't have the slot to take a nav team to use a comms net or banked token to turn either. Jer Jerahd will be another good one for maneuverability, which it's definitely going to lack. That way you can still run other things, so I guess it's really just Thrawn and Jer Jerahd for the commanders if you want to have any sort of flexibility. With such a huge base, those turns are going to swing very, very wide, though, and there's no indication that it can ignore overlapping, so it's possible it may not be able to turn at all in some situations. It might just ram stuff with its back end. Regardless, that lack of nav team is huge. You're either going to be unable to keep your biggest arc facing the enemy because you're running squadrons, or a pairing, or you're going to give those things up in order to go straight navs. We'll have to see what other rules will come, like how it deploys when its base is longer than the deployment zone, to determine the full effect of any of this, so I'm holding off on final judgment. Palpatine is looking really powerful. He's 35 points, which is less than Vader, Thrawn, or Tarkin, and he's basically a super intel officer. You put a defense token of each type on his card, and then spend them each turn, and if your opponent spends one of that type, it is discarded. This is a huge deal, I say without testing it, because you can just strip away the primary defenses of a ship at the right moment. Put Palpatine in a double ISD list with Demolisher, let's say. Strip off the evades at long range, then when you get in on the big ships, hit their brace. Or if they're flying Mon Mothma, you strip off the evades at close range, too. Yeah, they might weather that first round by discarding, but your subsequent rounds will punish them. Again, no testing, but the Emperor might be a huge part of the upcoming meta. Okay. I've gotten the hype and analysis out of the way. If I'm being honest, I'm actually really ambivalent about the SSD. Again, while the model is cool and will upend the meta, I have serious misgivings about it. Indulge me for a moment. First, assuming that the SSD comes out in January and not later or even misses the first quarter deadline, that's a full year between Armada releases. That's a long time. Then, what we're getting is a single-faction, premium release, which isn't something that will keep the game afloat and players engaged after the hype has worn off. A premium product is something you release as a centerpiece luxury item when your game is humming along. Warhammer 40,000 can make enormous titans because the core game is doing just fine, and if someone wants to pay $1,000 or more for that one, it's a prestige thing. But this is designed to be used in normal play, and comes with cards that will be used in such, so there's real incentive for all players to get one to have all the latest cards. Letting Armada's players stew for a year and then saying the next thing is this huge should-be prestige item for just one faction, and that isn't how you sustain a community. Second, that price point. $200 is a lot of money. It's twice what the epic X-Wing ships cost, approximately, and four times what the most expensive Armada ship to date is. I get that they went really big and really cool with it, but there really isn't any need to. We all know the scale of the SSD is going to be completely out of whack with the ISD, so why not make it about the same size, maybe a little bigger than the epic X-Wing ships, and price it accordingly? $120 is a lot easier to justify than $200. Armada is already really expensive to get into, and now you're going to layer on a $200 ship that you're going to include non-epic tournament-legal cards on? And finally, Palpatine. He looks really strong if used in a non-SSD fleet. If, as I think he will, he becomes the new Riken that everyone wants to take, putting him on a $200 ship smacks of pay-to-win. And that really doesn't sit well with me. This may just amount to a bunch of doom and gloom, but I love Armada and I want it to thrive. I want it to stick around for a long time, but if this is the only release planned, in about a week or two, all the questions that can be asked and answered will be, and the community will be back to where it was, just with a release on the horizon. A very expensive, single-faction release. We'll be in the same meta we were before, and we'll be in for the next 5 to 7 months. That's not going to keep a community going, especially since players were already complaining about things getting stale. This can cause players to leave and move on to another game, and while they say they'll come back for the SSD, not all of them will. Their excitement and wallets will transfer over, and the investment, both emotional and financial, will be too great to return. This is especially true for those of us who prefer playing Rebels, as we have zero to look forward to. Rebel players will likely be waiting over a year for anything to come out for them. I don't want the community to shrink. I want it to grow. But if FFG isn't going to put the time in on Armada, there's only so much I can do. I really hope that they announce something else. Maybe they're putting all their resources into putting out Clone Wars content for Armada that they haven't announced yet, like they are for X-Wing and Legion. But they could at least put out a new campaign or something to give us all something new to play with. A year is just too long for a game to sit idle like this. Anyway, let's get back to the actual game, with a ship I think is underrated, the Hammerhead Corvette. The Hammerhead Corvette comes two to a pack, which is unfortunate because you really want to either run them singly or with three or more. The Hammerhead is a very cheap ship, with definite strengths and definite weaknesses, and it combos well with several commanders for good effect. And since they're nice and cheap, you can weather the loss of one of them pretty easily, and it takes a pretty strong hit to knock one out. Hammerheads are solid ships for their small size. Both versions have two shields up front and one everywhere else, plus a solid five hull. They boast a defense suite of an evade, a redirect, and a contain, which isn't great once they get close in, which is probably going to happen. The more expensive Scout Hammerhead is 41 points, and for that, you get two reds and a blue out the front, a single blue out the sides, nothing in the rear arc, and a blue anti-squadron die. It also has an officer, weapons team, offensive retrofit, and turbolaser slots. The less expensive torpedo version is 36 points, and does one of each out the front, blue, black, red, one black die out the sides, and again, skunked in the rear arc, plus a black anti-squad die. It also swaps out the turbo laser for an ordnance slot. The other thing you have to really be aware of is how these things move. They can get up to speed 3, but their turning profile is wonky. Basically, they get two clicks at the first joint and one at the second until you hit top speed, where speed 3 just gets you one at the first and second joint and nothing at the third. So, pretty maneuverable at lower speeds, like speed 1, really, but awful at the top. You also need to be aware that all your turning power is right off the bat, so be ready to bank and then shoot straight forward for a bit unless you have a nav order. For builds, the Hammerhead is actually pretty flexible. It can keep it at distance to harry fleets with the Scout, or be a close-in delivery system with the torpedo, and there's a fair amount of flexibility in what you want to deliver there. Plus, you have to know whether or not you're running Sato. For the officer slot, there's not a lot of great fits. It's a one-command ship, so you don't need any dial manipulation, but you can certainly put Leia on it to help other ships nearby. A lighter ship like this isn't a great place for damage manipulation, and it doesn't do enough output on the average to warrant an intel officer. Since you can't guarantee it'll last all game, cards like Ahsoka aren't a good fit, but a one-off like Hondo is. You can also slap a veteran captain on it if you're going to need a token and have 3 points to spare, but really, other than Hondo, I'd leave it empty. The exception being if you're doing a delivery run for some kind of engineers and boarding crew, and have Task Force Antilles, then Lando or Durlan can be a good choice. For weapon team, I think veteran gunners are your best bet for a shooty Hammerhead. There's too many different dice colors for Kaitkin and Sholan, and gunnery teams are both too expensive on this ship, and it doesn't do enough output for them for the points. If you're running Sato and a torpedo version, ordnance experts are a great pick, but otherwise, again, there aren't enough black dice for it to really matter. However, the Hammerhead is a great delivery system for boarding teams. If you're going cheap, boarding engineers are a good choice, as the troopers are based off the Squadron of One. Make sure you're going after a bigger hit to put those cards on, or at least running external racks to get a good damage shot so you don't waste them, though. Where the Hammerhead shines is the boarders that don't go off stats, Jyn Erso and Cam Syndulla.
Syndulla.
Blast it, Thrawn, not now. I haven't seen raid tokens get big out here, or anywhere really, but dropping two of them can mess up someone's day for sure. However, given the choice, I like dropping Cam on them, especially when something like a Star Destroyer comes around. Giving an ISD with no fighter support, nothing but squadron commands for the next three turns is something I have done, and it's fantastic. If you're not going for an unwanted delivery, you'll be looking at offensive retrofits. Again, not a lot of great options here. Most are for or against squadrons, so those are out, and small ships don't need tractor beams. However, in a Raddus fleet, you might find some use for rapid launch bays to put Luke or a B-Wing in good position, or for the Scout Hammerhead, and especially with Sato, disposable capacitors are a good choice. Now, we split up for a moment. The Scout has turbo lasers. There's not a lot of terrible ones in here, though I would personally steer clear of XX9s, XX7s, heavy turbo lasers, quad turbo lasers, and enhanced armaments. The damage output just isn't reliable enough for the first three to matter much. There's not enough dice to hit an accuracy reliably enough for quads, and the side shots are only going to be marginally better with a very expensive upgrade. My picks here would be dual turbo lasers on the cheap end just to pick up a little more damage on average, or turbo laser reroutes even though it's using the only evade you have. I view hammerheads as a little more disposable than some, though, so keep that in mind. Slave turrets can also be nice, but I still prefer duels, and H9s can turn this into a flotilla hunter. Over on the torpedo and its ordnance slot, again, there's only one black die, so anything that goes off a crit isn't going to reliably see use. External racks are the clear winner here for both being cheap and getting that one solid hit off before the ship inevitably detonates. But if you want to get really crazy, expanded launchers could do very, very expensive work. And if you want to get even crazier, try for double arcs and equip rapid reload. If you're running Sato and hit more black dice, then by all means go for proton torpedoes or concussion missiles, and make sure you've got those ordnance experts on it as well. For titles, much like the MC-30, the Hammerhead sings when you put a title on it, so much so that I consider them mandatory. The Hammerhead also introduced the first non-unique title, that of the Task Force. Obviously, they work better in groups, and not at all alone, so first let's talk about the single title, Garrel's Honor. Why they didn't use the name Lightmaker from Rogue One instead of making one for a minor battle in Rebels, I'll never know, but it does the same thing. Super ramming damage. It's perfect for a delivery ship. Once the cargo is sent off, just shoot and ram until it blows up. It also works well in a Raddus fleet, since you can place it up close and personal right away and start throwing crits. And of course, Dodonna loves it too. Cool little thing about it also, it ignores hardened bulkheads. Hardened bulkheads only works against face-down damage. Face-up goes right through. Of the two task forces, I vastly prefer Task Force Antilles. On the approach into range, throwing one point of damage to another ship can be a lifesaver. If you have a ship with CAM on it, coupling Antilles with Durlin or Lando can mean the difference between not getting a successful delivery and achieving your goal, so keep that in mind. The downside is that a ship with an exhausted Antilles can't spend engineering, but you're probably never going to do that anyway with a Hammerhead. On its face, Organa looks good, it's cheap, and it gives those precious rerolls the Hammerhead really lacks, especially if it's using the weapon team slot for a boarding crew. However, I think it's more trouble than even one point is worth, since the downside is that an exhausted Organa means that you can't attack a ship. You can certainly make this work by having at least one be a torpedo at long range, making an attack run so you can use it first, then use the one on the ship that just shot, since it no longer matters if it can't attack ships again this round, it's already activated, and so on. You can also just make sure you have other reroll upgrades on one, activate it first, then shoot, use, let's say, veteran gunners, and then use its Organa and so on like before. But honestly, we're getting into a lot of set activation order and hassle to make it go. Since Antilles just works when you take damage, take it and be very happy. Using a task force means you have to stay a little closer together, but I will say that range 3 on a smaller ship is longer than you'd think. 1 point might not be a big deal when you close on a Star Destroyer, but on the approach, when they throw red dice at you coupled with your evade, that can keep you with a full front shield, and your opponent has to throw 8 points of damage, 9 if they can't lock your redirect, at you, which is no mean feat. Sure, a ship with an exhausted Antilles can't spend engineering, but that 2 engineering value isn't going to do a lot anyway, is it? My typical solo build looks like this. Garrel's Honor, Cam Syndulla, external racks, and maybe Hondo if I need him and there's nowhere else to put him. It's a disposable missile. I just run it ahead of whatever I'm using to close with, and if it gets destroyed on the approach, usually it takes a couple of hits that didn't go into my main hitter. If it doesn't, or they ignore it, then it's nothing but close-up ramming damage after I wreck their command dials with CAM and empty the racks until it detonates in a heroic fireball. When I run them in groups, my build and strategy will depend on which commander I'm using. Some I might try to keep at a distance, others I run into swarm at close range. Here's the commanders that work best with hammerheads. Raddus works with that solo build to drop it right in an opponent's face and get to work. Maydeen will make up for the lackluster turning ability to keep it on target. Ryken can keep it alive at a crucial moment, allowing for one last face-up ram. Mon Mothma also improves survivability, making a close-up swarm highly annoying. I've mentioned Sato. He's great for throwing three black dice at long range with ordnance crits. And Leia, well, they're one-command ships, so she loves them. They don't get much out of Kraken, since they're so terrible at turning at speed 3 the benefit won't matter much, as they might get one or two rounds of shooting before they zip past and are utterly out of position for the rest of the game. Dodona has some effect with them, but since they aren't a reliable crit source without Sato or Leia, barring that one round of external racks, he's not great for swarms. However, a single Geralt's Honor becomes a huge threat without any other upgrades, making it a cheap threat just on its own. If you're set on Dodona, run a Geralt's Honor at speed 3 right into a target and start laying on optimized crits to ruin their day early. Surprisingly, Admiral Akbar is one that I also advise for the solo Hammerhead. While it doesn't gain anything for it all from him, since the front arc is always better than the sides, it is cheap, and the tactic of chucking Geralt's Honor at something is a solid one when you're running the typical MC-80, MC-75, otherwise big ships Akbar list. It draws shots that should be going into your main hitter, and if it doesn't, your big ship can typically weather those hits at longer range, then your hammerhead can block their approach while dealing out face-ups and external racks to help soften it up. If you're looking for a screen for your 80, the hammerhead is cheap enough to do the job without detracting too much from your Akbar firepower. For swarms, I have a Leia build that I've had some success with, though it really only works against a fleet with a big ship in it. Against multiple smaller vessels, it tends to fall apart due to a lack of individual ship punch and maneuverability. The fleet looks like this. A TRC-90 with Leia and Janus Light, a B with SW-7s and Dodona's Pride, a transport with Bright Hope, and then four Hammerhead torpedoes with Antilles, two of them with external racks, and two with boarding engineers. There's also three X-Wings and Han's along for the ride to keep his general company. While the two corvettes swoop around to deal out some damage, with the B ideally putting a card or two directly onto something for later, and the transport pushes the X-Wings, the four Hammerheads close rapidly on target, using Antilles to keep them running. One of them might go down, but once they close, the racks fire first, softening the target, and using a concentrate fire dial plus token to maximize output and start putting cards onto it. Then, the engineers go in and start flipping those cards, tearing down shields, adding more cards, and generally making a mess of things before either blowing up or moving past. It's a fun fleet, but it's a one-trick pony that doesn't work if they don't have a large target. Still, if you're looking for a good time, I advise it. I wouldn't use it competitively, though, unless you practice a ton with it and your local meta leans towards big ship fleets. The Hammerhead is a cheap ship that isn't a threat by stats alone, but in a swarm or with the ramming title, it can present an outsized threat. Used wisely, they can punch way above their weight class and are tougher to kill than they look. Just watch out for that weak rear arc, and either give them lots of navigation or be very well practiced in how they fly, or they'll just zoom past without accomplishing much. After the break, look, out in space, it's a ship, it's a squadron, no, it's the Decimator!
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back! The VT-49 Decimator follows the rules of a squadron, but is really a ship on a squadron base. It only moves speed 3, putting it at the back of the Imperial pack, but boasts a whopping 8 hull. It throws a respectable 3 black dice against squadrons, and an incredible 3 blues against ships. It also runs itself with Rogue, and has counter 1 and heavy. It's pretty pricey, too, at 22 points. But the Decimator, it's a slow-moving beast. It can take down generic and non-scatter aces fairly quickly, but where you really want it is near an enemy ship firing with those blue dice. With each die having a 50% chance of doing damage plus potential accuracies, it's a good hitter to start softening up shields and potentially exhausting defense tokens. Your opponent won't be able to ignore this little powerhouse and will either have to defer at least one squadron to lock it down or try to outrun it, which might not be possible. Decimators really like slow, big ships as targets since they can't get away as easily. That 8 hull means they can take the flak hits while attacking and then start dishing it out. Anything faster than speed 2 and their target will probably escape after that first shot. It does have some pretty glaring weaknesses, though. By its stats, it would be amazing as an escort. No, not the keyword. Escort for ships, but heavy rules that out. It lacks grit, so a single squadron can pin one down until they decide to move on or those nasty black dice cut it to pieces. Without bomber, and since the Empire has not a Torin Far equivalent, it can't reroll any dice to up its output at all, so you could get some swingy results on attack runs against ships. Since it lacks a way to get accuracies, a scatter ace is going to ruin its day. And of course, it's on the slower end, so it isn't going to be jumping around the battlefield. There are ways to mitigate these weaknesses, however. More than any other rogue, Decimator benefits from being activated like a normal squadron. Rogue gives it the flexibility to not have to activate it, but there are a few cards that really patch up the VT-49's shortcomings. Chirinu's ability to move while engaged will help it when that single squadron ties it up at a crucial moment. Yeah, it only moves speed 2, but that's not a whole lot slower than 3. Flight controllers will give it a needed blue die for a chance at locking down a scatter, or just increasing its firepower. Plus, activating it at command will potentially let it get the drop on anything looking to pin it down. Other things it works well with are the Arkitan's title, Centaur, so you can move it around a flank, fighter coordination team gets it that extra movement boost, and surprisingly, it's a great target for ruthless strategists. 8 hull means it's happy to take that damage to make Tycho get one more hit. This is also where you could make a fleet that has a couple of decimators as escorts for ships. Heavy doesn't hurt as bad when your VT-49s are in the middle of their bombing wing and start absorbing damage to throw unavoidable points out to your attackers. Put it on a powerful flacker like an ISD or a raider, and you'll put the hurt on anything that gets in close to it. As a rogue, the Decimator works well with just about every commander save one, which is Sloan, where it takes up points that could be used for squadrons that she buffs. Even then, a Sloan list is more likely to have the upgrades I mentioned above, so there could be a place for it even in her fleets. Basically, while the Decimator is expensive and has some drawbacks, I think it can work well in the right fleet, and it'll probably surprise your opponent to see it on the battlefield. The VT-49 ace is Admiral Sloan's pilot, Morna Key, who obviously got promoted to have her own ship. It has exactly the same stats as a normal Decimator, and is 5 more points for 27 total, which buys you a single brace and drops heavy, but it's her ability that gets you the most value. Morna Key can spend her single brace to re-roll any number of dice in her attack. This is a huge deal for Decimator, and coupled with flight controllers and or Cheery, sews up the last of their weaknesses. 3 black dice that you can re-roll, or 3 blue dice with the same, are pretty beefy and have good damage potential. But that's not all. When Morna activates, she regains that brace token if it's been discarded. So there's very little reason not to burn it every turn if you need to. Now, since she only has the one brace, you're going to have to make some decisions when it comes to reroll time. How many attacks, with how much potential damage do you expect, how much hull is remaining on her, etc., before you spend that brace. You might need it for 2 attacks you're expecting to come in instead of rerolling. Of course, You can mitigate those attacks by using the reroll to blow up one of your attackers before they attack you, so keep that in mind. Being rogue helps out with this as well if you're facing an opponent who is running a carrier build. They're going to probably get the jump on her, so you can spend those braces as needed if you have to, and if it's still around for her attack, well, that's just gravy. Also, remember that she gets it back when she activates, so if you do burn it against a carrier fleet with her normal rogue activation at the end of the turn, they're going to get a squadron command to hit her before she can get her brace back if you just use rogue. Of course, the solution to this is to give her a squad command of her own, preferably with flight controllers, and start preempting the incoming damage with a hard barrage of her own. And, sort of like Han in this situation, remember, she can use rogue to go last or so in the previous round, and then in the current round, do that squadron command, get that brace token back before they can realize what's happening, and you get a last-in, first-out sort of situation. Otherwise, Morna can mostly run on her own, and just like a regular Decimator. Even more so than her non-ace kin, the reroll makes her a nasty customer that loves attacking ships. She's basically the front arc of a CR-90B or a Raider II at medium range, but with a reroll, and that's nothing to sneeze at. And remember, she doesn't have heavy, so she can actually escort your ships against bombers. I find she works really well in a Corellian conflict campaign, too, where her big points won't hit your list as hard when you approach 500. She's no Han shooting first, and no Hera giving out rogue, but she's a solid little powerhouse that you can get stuck in and just start shooting with. And if she doesn't come out on top, she should at least get her points back in utility. That's it for this episode. Next time, it's the Quasar Fire, and we'll get a little rebellious with the Lancer. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Admiral, did you survive your Superstar Destroyer encounter?
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.